Make sure I get this recorded. Good. So, as most of you know, we're working on a series of teachings, the Lojong teachings, and we're now into the third week of practice. Using Norman Fisher's book called Training in Compassion, Zen Teachings on the Practice of Lojong. And for those who are just joining us, and perhaps refresh our collective memory, Lojong is a Tibetan word and refers to a set of 59 slogans or aphorisms or phrases, perhaps, that help us to cultivate compassion. Of course, all the great spiritual traditions in the world exhort us to be kind and compassionate. And of course, in our own lives, I think we see a lot of self-centeredness, greed, fear, this kind of sense of separation from myself and other people. And while we aspire to be compassionate, maybe have many thoughts about compassion, we may find ourselves questioning, well, really, how compassionate am I in my daily life? Compassion is really challenging, I think. It's really challenging to bring forward when we are kind of entangled in stress, blame, feelings of inadequacy, kind of overly busy, or just plain scared. How do we bring compassion forward then? How do we stand in a compassionate place? So Lojong is a system of practices to help short-circuit our habitual ways of responding from a place of self-centeredness, and instead offer our words, our speech, our actions that are really grounded in compassion. And the main technique that's used in the Lojong practice are, as I mentioned, these kind of short phrases or slogans that we can bring to mind, hopefully, when we're noticed or caught in some kind of habitual reaction. So we've already started studying a number of these slogans over the past weeks, and the slogans we're considered tonight and for the rest of this whole series involve the cultivation of what's known as relative bodhicitta. And Kate talked about relative bodhicitta earlier, so I hope you'll listen to the second talk if you haven't already. But just to again kind of say a word or two about relative bodhicitta, I just want to quote Pema Chodron, a famous American who's a teacher of Tibetan Buddhism, because she gives a very helpful and succinct definition or explanation, perhaps I should say, of relative bodhicitta. She says, "It is our ability to keep our hearts and minds open to suffering without shutting down." In other words, rather than trying to secure our position by, you know, being right or by blaming ourselves or other people, or by possessiveness, lying, or retreating into a sense of, you know, deep shame, despair, or self-hate, we simply meet each moment wholeheartedly. I think that's what she's saying. Lojong is about somehow shifting our focus, shifting our view, so we don't reify over and over again our sense of self, whether positively or negatively. So rather than doing that, Lojong is about connecting to the other. So tonight we're studying chapter 4 in Norman's book. And I should just mention, Norman Fisher is the founding teacher of Mountain Rain Zen Community, and founding teacher of also the Everyday Zen community down in, well, it's kind of all over the place, but centered in Marin County in California. The chapter of the title, this chapter 4 of Norman's book, is called Transforming Bad Circumstances into the Path. So I think from the title, you can get a pretty good idea of what these slogans are going to be asking us to do. So the, going to put these ones that we're going to be studying there on the chat, just so you can look at them if you wish. So the first one is, turn all mishaps into the path. And Norman once told me that the great difficulty in spiritual practice is simply to remember to do it. And he wasn't talking about, you know, daily meditation practice or going to retreats, although those are important. But what he was talking about were the times when life, our life, really challenges us in various big and various small ways. It is at those very times that we need the Dharma teachings. We need them the most, I think, at that time, because we're often simply swept away, you know, by our habitual reactions. And maybe we're being judged, or misunderstood, or burdened, or inconvenienced, attacked, or maybe we're simply bewildered, or we're lost somehow, or rejected by somebody. Now, those are the times when all our good intentions tend to kind of fly out the window, and it kind of all becomes about me and my pain and struggle, suffering here. So this slogan really is quite radical, because it asks us to make the very obstacles that stand in our way, to make them skillful means to practice with. And I find this radical because usually, don't we just want everything to go smoothly? To get our own way? To not have to deal with our own or other people's issues? Turn all mishaps into the path reminds us it's not personal. The unfortunate and the painful things that happen to us are really part of the human condition. They're not personal attacks. These arise for all kinds of causes and conditions, most of which we have no control over. We can, though, include them in our practice. And once again, Norman told me, and I think he's told many people actually, that if our practice does not help us face the most challenging times of our life, including our very dying, what use is it? So how does one turn all mishaps into the path? Well, the first step, I think, is to commit to full awareness of our condition and of our deep intention. Norman, in his book, frames this as a practice of patience. And here's an example. I'll just read you that Norman gives. An example of how to work using this slogan. So Norman writes, "We think, oh yes, I really am angry right now. I'm pretty upset right now. But this doesn't belong to me. This upset is what people feel under such conditions, and of course I feel this way. And I'm grateful to feel what everyone feels under such conditions. I'm glad to stand in solidarity and understanding with other human beings who are probably right now, at this very moment, also feeling this." We're not alone in whatever afflictive state we're caught in. This slogan reminds us of that. Now, it may seem, you know, oh, boy, this is really beyond my ability. But these slogans are to help us train our mind in different pathways. These are trainings, as Norman says in his book a number of times. And so we must make these slogans, or a similar slogan that we may want to tweak, we must make them ours. We must repeat it during our meditation session, perhaps, at the very beginning or very end, remind us, oh yes, this is the intention I have. This is the practice I'm going to bring forward today. By writing it down, you know, writing about it. What does it mean to you? How are you going to express it? Maybe simply writing the slogan down and posting it on the fridge. Doing whatever it takes to make the slogan really yours. Norman encourages us, and let me just read this little passage again. He writes, "The way you spontaneously react in times of trouble is not fixed. Your mind, your heart can be trained. Once you have a single experience of reacting differently, you will be encouraged. Next time, it is more likely that you'll be able to take yourself in hand. Each time becomes easier than the last, and little by little you establish a new habit. When something difficult happens, you will train yourself to stop saying, 'Damn it, why did this have to happen?' and instead begin to say, 'Yes, of course, this is how it is. Let me turn toward it. Let me practice with it. Let me go beyond entanglement, even to gratitude.' Because you will have realized that because you are alive and not dead, because you have a human body and not some other kind of body, because the world is a physical world and not an ethereal world, because all of us together as people are the way we are, bad things are going to happen. It's the most natural, the most normal, the most inevitable thing. It's not a mistake. It's not anyone's fault." So practicing the Dharma, all the practices of the Dharma, in fact, I think, put together, does not mean our problems are going to go away, that we will overcome all our difficulties, but rather we will be better equipped to hold them with a kind of mindfulness and loving kindness. And in this way, this very holding of what troubles us in our life, we are transformed. Kind of strange, but we're transformed by the very afflictions that we experience. And through them, we become more spacious. We become more compassionate. So the next slogan is drive all blames into one. This is a toughie. Now, this slogan helps us work with the blame game. Our tendency to blame another person, or our tendency to blame ourselves. We live in a pretty litigious society, assigning blame whenever something goes wrong. Whose fault is it? Is it mine, hers, his? And something, of course, always goes wrong, doesn't it? Having someone to blame may seem to bring a bit of relief from our troubles. But it's a false relief, because it simply nurtures painful thoughts and feelings and does very little, or maybe does nothing, to ease the situation itself. And as we all know, you know, from our personal experience or having seen our friends or family, when two people blame each other, it leads nowhere except maybe to more suffering. When we recite the Bodhisattva precepts on the full moon, The seventh precept is expressed in different ways. Not to praise self at the expense of others is the way we in our group traditionally express it. But another version is this: not to praise self and blame others. There's a very famous story that Norman does write about briefly in the book about blame in the Zen tradition. And this, what I'd like to read to you, though, is not Norman's version, but the version that comes from Robert Aiken's book, The Mind of Clover. And Robert Aiken, for those of you who don't know the name, is one of the first Zen teachers, American Zen teacher who traveled to Japan, studied there for many years, and taught in the West, largely in Hawaii. Delightful writer, I find. So anyway, so here's his story of this. At the monastery of Hukai Eikun, monasteries delayed the preparation of the noon meal. And one day, when they were over, the cook took up his sickle and hurried to gather vegetables from the garden. In haste, he lopped off part of a snake, and unaware that he had done so, threw it in the soup pot with the vegetables. At the meal, the monks thought they had never tasted such delicious soup. But the Roshi himself, the great teacher there at the monastery, found something remarkable in his bowl. Summoning the cook, using his chopsticks, he picked up the head of the snake and demanded, "What is this?" The cook immediately walked up to the Roshi, took the morsel from the Roshi's chopsticks, swallowed it, and said, "Oh, thank you, Roshi." When we blame others, we separate them from ourselves. And in doing so, often we dodge looking into our own role. Kind of by blaming others, we ourselves are off the hook. But there's a further problem, I think, with blaming. We avoid looking deeply at the root of the problem and often miss contributing in a wholehearted way to the solution, whatever that problem may be. It's not my fault and I'm out of here kind of situation, kind of attitude. So our practice is not to blame ourselves. I don't think this slogan, "Drive all blames into one," is like saying everything's my fault. I think it's a kind of dance. As Robert Aiken writes in his book, can we swallow the head of the snake and dance away? So drive all blames into one. Even if it's not your fault, can you eat the blame? And of course, this is not the kind of neurotic hand-wringing of self-blame. Drive all blames into one is not saying, of course, that we should wallow in guilt and shame any more than we should kind of wag our finger at somebody else. This slogan simply asks us to accept reality without hesitation. There are times to tell another person what was wrong or hurtful, of course, times to be a whistleblower, times to stand up and speak the truth. But this is not blaming. This is simply taking responsibility, responding to the situation. In each case, I think this slogan is asking us to respond to the situation with compassion and in a truthful way. So the next slogan is be grateful to everyone. Kate, can you just turn the clock towards me so I can see it? Thank you. This is one of my favorites. Gratitude is like grace. Sometimes without our knowing, it can well up and warm a cool heart. It connects us to that which is much larger than our self. Gratitude is a place of silence that allows the world in. In gratitude, we are happy. Happy because we are at home in the fullness of our being. But I don't think gratitude is something extra, something outside of us that comes in once in a while, something that we have and then don't have. I think gratitude is like, well, it's like the sculptors who say that they just release the forms from the wood, or they release the forms from the stone. When our thinking slows down and the heart relaxes, often the extra is removed, the extra of our thoughts and concerns and judgments. And gratitude, a kind of quiet gratitude, is laid bare. I hope some of you these days are able to get out into nature in some way. Mountains and lakes speak to us. Wild flowers gladden the heart. Walking amongst trees brings stillness and contemplation. And nothing more is needed. There is simply a natural sense of abundance. Have you noticed that when we feel a sense of being grateful for a moment even, there is a very profound sweetness in the experience of gratitude, not for anything in particular, but just for life. In that experience, there's a stillness and an openness that lets the wonder come in. There's a poem, one of my favorite poems, by Denise Levertov that I've read before, I'm sure, in one or two Dharma talks. Anyway, it's called That Passeth All Understanding. An awe so quiet, I don't know when it began. A gratitude has begun to sing in me. Was there some moment dividing song from no song? When does dewfall begin? When does night fold its arms over our hearts to cherish them? When is daybreak? The world offers itself to us. So much sweetness and so much difficulty. In the Zen tradition, there's a famous quote or saying by the great Chinese ancestor Yunmen. He said, every day is a good day. Every day is a good day. This slogan is perhaps Yunmen's admonition to us to be grateful. For even dealing with annoying people, difficult situations, sickness, blame, can every day be a good day? Reflect for a moment on something difficult for you. The kind of situation or person that would not inspire a kind of conventional gratitude. Can you find at this moment within yourself some way to extend gratitude to include that person of that situation as well. One way is to honor the connection that we have with all beings. Again, let me read you a passage from Norman. He writes, "Literally every thought in our minds, every emotion that we feel, every word that comes out of our mouth, every material sustenance that we need to get through the day comes through the kindness of and the interaction with others. And not only other people, but also non-humans too. Literally the whole of the earth, the soil, the sky, the trees, the air we breathe, the water we drink. We not only depend on all of this, we are all of it, and it is us." This is no theory, no poetic religious teaching. It is simply the bald fact of the matter. So to practice, be grateful to everyone, is to train in this profound understanding. So there's 6 slogans here in this chapter, so I'm just going to lightly touch on the last 3. There it is. Okay. I think that should be enough time. Because these 3 kind of echo a lot of what we've just talked about and looked at in the first 3. There's a lot of kind of overlap with these slogans, but I think that's deliberate. Because some slogans will simply resonate with you more than others. Okay, so the next slogan is called "See Confusion as Buddha and Practice Emptiness." It's a little more complex than the other translations that I've looked at, but this is Norman's, and I think it's pretty helpful. So with this slogan, we are again facing what we usually consider undesirable. In everyday life, there's often some confusion happening, right? Something that doesn't make sense. And usually, of course, we try to figure it out. Quickly make it workable, because confusion is unpleasant. But this slogan asks us to first stop and cherish our confusion and transform it into a gate of boundlessness. Pausing and just resting in our confusion, we let go. We let go of the distress, we let go of the self-pity, the defensiveness, the blaming, whatever is there, and we see that the confusion itself is empty. Or to use the Buddhist terminology, the confusion itself is simply shunyata. It arises, it abides for a time and disappears, all against the vast sky of boundlessness. Confusion is okay. If we can simply be present with it. And then, of course, we see what we can do to correct this situation. But again, it can be a gate into boundlessness. We finally let go of everything. So the next slogan is do good, avoid evil, appreciate your lunacy, pray for help. That's kind of 4 crammed into 1. So this slogan, though, is pretty straightforward. It lays out 4 specific practices to kind of incorporate into our everyday life. First practice, do good. Be of benefit to others. Be of benefit to this world. Second practice, avoid harming anyone, right? Avoid evil. And the third practice, appreciate your lunacy. Well, I'll let Norman describe that one. He writes, bow. Bow to your own weakness, your own craziness, your own resistance. We come by all these things honestly. Develop a sense of humorous appreciation for your stupidity. That's a delightful one, isn't it? Can we bow to our own stupidity, weaknesses, craziness, resistance? Now, the fourth practice is to pray for help, right? And I think this means to reach out beyond ourselves, beyond anything we can objectively depict, and ask for help. And maybe you believe in a divine force of some kind. Maybe you have a practice of chanting to Kanon, Kanzeon. But whether or not you do, you can still simply ask for help. Help me. Reach out beyond your fixed ideas. Help. The last one, whatever you meet is the path. Well, this kind of echoes all of these, right? Maybe all the slogans together, I think this kind of really echoes it. Sums up the practice really well. Each and every situation is an opportunity for growth and awakening. Gradually, open your view of meditation to include every aspect of your life. Meet all changes and challenges with awareness and compassion. Whatever you meet is the path. Whoever you meet is the path. Simply meet everything with awareness and compassion. So how do you practice with these slogans? Well, Norman says, of course, and I said earlier, you know, repeat, 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 bring them to mind, work on them again. In the Tibetan tradition, you would memorize all 59. But I think the important thing is just to, for us, pick two or three, write them down, post them somewhere, and really try to work with them. Really try to work with them. Which ones resonate for you? Okay, so we have time. I'm going to put you into groups again using my magic breakout room icon here. I see we have... Great, so I'll put you in groups of three. I hope this is going to work. Some people are maybe... And... I'll put you in groups of three, and there may be one group of two. We'll see how this works here. And then I'd like you to do this. I've posted these ones on the chat so you can refer to them. I'd like you to think about your own life for a moment. What are your main challenges for you at this time? And is there a slogan that may be helpful for you? So you could talk about what you're facing right now for you. Perhaps a slogan or two that you might use and how you would use it. And maybe what that slogan means for you. And if that doesn't resonate for you, you can talk about anything that you've heard about in the talk. That'd be fine as well. But really kind of think about for you what is up, so to speak. And each person will get about 3 minutes, and I'll bring us all back together after 10. And if everyone, you have kind of self-time here, and again, kind of what is said in the little breakout group room stays in that room. But if everyone has spoken and there's still some time left over, I haven't called you back yet, feel free to also just chat a little bit as well. I think it's important that during this time. So I'm going to magically put you into groups. Okay, let's see here. Oops, okay, one more. I'll do it this way. Just about.
Oh, are we muted?
I just did. There she goes. Okay. All in.
All in. You want to relocate so that we're back?